Okay, this is session number 43, recorded on June 11th, 2007, side one, and we're going to continue from session 42. I want to finish reviewing the last quote we were doing in the LaRouche section of my book, and this quote is from a book review by Lyndon LaRouche of Bob Woodward's book on William Casey, and it's from the Executive Intelligence Review, October 16th, 1987. The review is called Woodward's Book on Casey, A Blend of Fact and Fiction, Volume 14, Number 41 of the Executive Intelligence Review, and the pages are 29, 30, and 31 of that issue. So, I'm not going to go back and review the whole quote, but two-thirds through it, or maybe halfway through it, we'll pick up where we left off, just before where we finished last time. This establishment, talking about the intelligence community, the post-war U.S. intelligence community, this establishment is a pastiche, somewhat like the late Meyer Lansky's corporate form of direction over U.S. organized crime, of various factional elements among the gods of Olympus. Let me read that again. This establishment is a pastiche, somewhat like the late Meyer Lansky's corporate form of direction over U.S. organized crime, a pastiche of various factional elements among, quote, the gods of Olympus, unquote. The establishment reaches decisions which determine the fate of individuals, governments, and nations. The official intelligence community merely executes the collective decisions reached within this establishment. The resulting situation properly reminds us of Aeschylus's play, Prometheus Bound, and also of one of Goethe's most successful poems, his Prometheus. In Aeschylus, Prometheus warns the gods of Olympus that there is a real god. Do that again. In Aeschylus, Prometheus warns the gods of Olympus that there is a real God, and that the Creator's world has embedded within it laws which shape the ultimate doom of whoever sets himself up as an Olympus in defiance of the Creator and his laws. So, under the establishment's rule, intelligence functions on three levels. One, the choices of policy directions by the higher echelons of the establishment itself, from which a man on Casey's 1981 to 1987 level is absolutely excluded. Two, the shaping of the implementation of establishment policy directives by committee-like formations composed of the designated representatives of sundry factions of the establishment into which Casey was integrated. Sort of like what I talked about, the four factions on the Secret Council 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And three, the shaping of implementation by somewhat freewheeling intelligence barons in quotes, at the level of Casey and below. So read that again. Number three, the shaping of implementation by somewhat freewheeling intelligence barons at the level of Casey and below. A Casey would, now they're saying, next paragraph, a Casey would receive directions from the highest level. So they mean a Casey type. A Casey type, or a Casey, would receive directions from the highest level, which he could not challenge. He could participate in the shaping of policy on the second level and would carry out the choice of implementation of policy which was adopted at that level. Within the limits of that decision, a man at Casey's level had wide latitude to do almost anything he could get by with, within understood guidelines. Woodward's book, this is Bob Woodward, Bob Woodward's book addresses only the third, the lowest, reading that again, Bob Woodward's book addresses only the lowest of these three levels and generally runs to the underside of that level. On the lowest level, most current U.S. intelligence operations are pure, quote, psyops, unquote. And he defines psyops as psychological warfare operations. On this level, the lower-ranking people, such as liberal news media journalists or entertainment media people, carry out the psyops. That might be like a Howard Hunt. While the higher-ranking circles on this operational level plan and coordinate the psyops operations. Now, the... Maybe Howard Hunt might be on the level of coordinating the PSYOPs operations, but it gets kind of blurred in the 70s when the word makes the market and everything is integrated in with the media or with the White House presentation and molding of the media. So maybe LaRouche's three levels are a bit more imploded than he realizes.
When you say the word makes the market, define what the components of the word is?
Well, it's a news event. It's a it's the statement of policy by the White House about whatever they think is important to address.
Mm-hmm.
So it's largely a verbal presentation, or at least something that's spoken, but then it's translated through all the different mega media environments into their various technological structures, how they react to that.
Mm-hmm.
So they are embedded in that word.
Uh-huh. And so that's comprised of all of the interests, industrial and military intelligence that we know about.
And entertainment.
And entertainment.
And sports.
Oh.
Everything.
Yeah.
The word implies an imploded orchestration.
Mm-hmm.
It's tactility. It's all the senses and their extensions.
Mm. Okay. Including those agencies we know about and those agencies we don't know about.
Yeah. Yeah, now when he says, going back a bit, he says, so under the establishment's rule, intelligence functions on three levels. The first level, the choices of policy directions by the higher echelons of the establishment itself, from which a man on Casey's 1981-87 level, that's when he was director of the CIA, is absolutely excluded. This is LaRouche's idea that ideas mold the society. So if it's an Aristotelian policy direction, or a Malthusian, or a Newtonian versus Leibnizian, that is the big determinant for the success of the society.
Mm-hmm.
And so LaRouche is saying ideas, which is what he favors.
Right.
Platonic idea, or he's a Platonist, but it's the idea that's so important. Most people would say ideas aren't that important. They're just used to create belief systems, and it's just raw military physical control, mm-hmm, or power or might that rules society. So that's the point here. LaRouche is different. He's saying that actually the quality of the word that makes the market, the intellectual quality, determines whether society is going to collapse or not.
Yeah. But if in the composition of the word makes the market, you have science and sports, you have the intelligence agencies that we know about, chief of staffs for the military that we know about, president and his agenda, and then you have these agencies above the president that are supposedly really calling the shot, then which is it that's the word that makes the market, or the ideas behind the machines?
Well, the idea that the word makes the market is McLuhan's Aristotelian point, and either he's right and LaRouche is wrong, or LaRouche is right, or neither's right. It's both or more, because LaRouche is thinking that the intellectual quality, what McLuhan called the left hemisphere thinking, determines the society. Now, that's real anemic from McLuhan's point of view. How can an idea or a direction deal with the complex extended tactility of the word that makes the market? But this is the point. LaRouche feels that Platonic ideas communicate higher conceptions, almost like a beauty is communicated, and that's what inspires people.
Mm-hmm.
So he ignores the media noise machine.
Right.
And I think anybody on a practical level would say that's pretty naive or idealistic or limited.
Would you say the Secret Council of Ten was Platonic or Aristotelian?
Neither. It was might.
Malthusian.
No, not Malthusian, just might.
Mm.
Just whoever controlled the levers. And the Secret Council 10 then let all the media and environments carry on.
Mm-hmm. And they tended to act Malthusian.
No, they didn't act anything.
No, I mean the environments that they let just do whatever they wanted to.
Well, it's so complex and chaotic. You have all these different countries and their administrations determining the quality of their nation's lifestyles. You know, 200 nations in the United Nations now, 190.
Oh.
All those are in the global theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's a machine, a subtle machine operating on its own momentum. That's what City Council 10 realized.
Right.
50 years ago or more.
But nobody in that mix is platonic except Lurie.
Right. Ideas play no role in the City Council 10 as I experienced it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Ideas don't. Okay. But then in the United Nations and the 200 countries, in the, all those countries, none of them are really platonic.
No. These Lurusian categories are silly. Compared to what people do.
Yeah.
I mean, those are categories that come out of literacy, and we're in a multi-level, multimedia, post-literate situation.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole educational establishments around the world claim that they are educating people and in the realm of ideas, supposedly.
Yeah. But not with the Socratic method of dialogue. It's more with the rule, with the, you know, I remember, well, boy, read Joyce's, of the artist? Portrait of the Artist?
Mm-hmm.
When he's a kid in school?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's not that bad anymore, but that was, you ruled by the ruler over the knuckles.
Yeah.
that's how education took place.
But people were tougher back then. They had tougher skins.
Yeah.
They lived, you know, without houses and everything, you know.
Yeah.
So that, our soft sensibilities are puny compared to what they put up with.
Yeah.
But that kind of toughness is not amenable to the soft, tactile lifestyles we live in the information society.
Mm-hmm.
You have to interact with so many people. You have to be more of a social, sensitive being.
Yeah.
Where back then you didn't have to be.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well,
it was cruder.
Right.
And people, you know, they worked hard physically.
Yeah.
Now people sit. Take phone calls.
Right.
Type in their computer.
Right.
Instant message. Constant communication going on.
Right.
It's a brain activity, which is more internal and softer.
Yeah.
So, shall we go on to the
next
section?
Yep.
This is fairly long. Now, this is the next quote. It's from a pamphlet that LaRouche put out called Stamp Out the Aquarian Conspiracy. Stamp Out the Aquarian Conspiracy, published in June 1980 by Citizens for LaRouche. So, and this is pages of that, I don't know, 50-page pamphlet. This is pages 11 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
So here's LaRouche analyzing the New Age movement, the William Aaron Thompson gang, or quadrant, or section, as it becomes a cultural meme by the late 70s. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the book, The Aquarian Conspiracy? Did you ever hear that?
Oh, yeah.
By Marilyn Ferguson? Well, they talk about that. But they say her book is a popularization of this major report put out by the Center for the Study of Social Policy, directed by Willis Harmon at SRI in Palo Alto, California.
Yeah, what's SRI stand for?
I think that's the Stanford Research Institute.
Mm.
That's where all that Hal Putoff and remote viewing was done.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure it's the same area, same part of Stanford University in California. Yeah, it does say Stanford Research Institute in the quote.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
That kind of material wouldn't come out of MIT, because MIT is more science-driven. I guess Stanford's in Berkeley, right? So that would be a little more New Age-y.
Stanford's in Palo Alto.
Palo Alto. I mean, yeah, it was the Santa Cruz area, I think. Actually.
North of that. No, Palo Alto's near San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
So anyways, you're saying what? That this is not MIT?
Yeah, no. I mean, Thompson was affiliated with MIT when he broke away.
But he left MIT because of his technocratic tendency.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're saying
I'm just saying MIT. This Aquarian Conspiracy wouldn't come out of a school like MIT, which is more science-oriented. It would come out of more of a West Coast, you know, hippie area like Palo Alto. That makes sense.
Yes, but Stanford itself is a very high-tech place. That's where Silicon Valley came out of.
Yeah.
Many of the gadgets of the late 70s, early 80s were developed out of Stanford. I think even Google comes out of Stanford. No, it comes out of Sun Microsystems, maybe, but they might have been students at Stanford.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is that California vibe there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's, and LaRouche represents the old New York hardware vibe, East Coast vibe.
Yeah.
So let's read this quote.
The peril this nation is imminently confronted with, in fact, the peril of the whole human species, In fact, the peril to the whole human species is nothing less than complete elimination of what mankind has historically regarded as its soul. Our brainwashers are proposing the complete extirpation of mankind's inner sense of identity and the placement in the vacant space of an artificial, synthetic, pseudo-soul.
And the first point where they said complete elimination of what mankind has historically regarded as its soul, the italicized soul.
Right. Before you, quote, before you howl, quote, incredible, you ought to review the technical study that was prepared in May 1974 by the Stanford Research Institute, whose contents were later used in popularized form in Marilyn Ferguson's book. The study entitled, this is all bold text, Changing Images of Man, contract number URH489-2150, policy research report number .4/4.74, prepared by SRI Center for the study of Social Policy, Willis Harmon, Director. Dr. Harmon later personally coached Marilyn Ferguson in writing her popularized version, The Aquarian Conspiracy. 319-page mimeographed SRI report was prepared by a team of 14 researchers and supervised by a supervisory panel of 23 controllers, including anthropologist Margaret Mead, psychologist B.F. Skinner, Irvin Laszlo of the United Nations, Sir Geoffrey Vickers of British Intelligence, and others. The study begins with the argument that the fundamental self-conception of mankind, the, quote, image that mankind has of itself, determines the behavior of mankind. To change mankind's behavior from industrial progress to, quote, spiritualism, one must first force a change in mankind's, quote, self-image. The report asserts that in our present society, the, quote, image of industrial and technological man, unquote, is obsolete and must be, quote, discharged.
Discarded.
The image of man appropriate to that new era must be sought, synthesized, and then wired into mankind's brain. The SRI report conducts a summary review of the, quote, dominant images of humankind throughout history, unquote, from 250,000 BC to present. It identifies 19, quote, images of man, unquote, that dominated in various epochs. From each one of those, it extracts such features as are useful in replacing the, quote, industrial technological image, unquote. Totemism and identification with animals in the upper Paleolithic era is reported useful today. The, quote, farmer son of goddess earth, unquote, of the Neolithic era is useful. The Sumerian image of submission to ruling elites must be retained in the post-industrial image. The Old Testament image of man having dominion, quote, dominion over nature, unquote, is dangerous and must be dropped. The Zoroastrian image needs to be, quote, worked on, unquote. The image, the Indian image of yogi is good, will contribute to the, quote, self-realization ethic, unquote. The Chinese Confucius image will contribute to the, quote, ecological ethic, unquote, of our future society. The Greek Dionysian slash mythical image can
mystical
image can contribute to de-emphasizing material over de-emphasize material over consumption. The Greek Apollonian image can help combat the, quote, technological ethic, unquote. The Christian image of the New Testament must be reworked. The Christian image of the Gnostic Gospels can contribute to a new, quote, self-realization ethic, unquote. But the image that emerged from the Italian Renaissance, the, quote, economic man, unquote, individualist, rationalist, materialist, seeking objective knowledge, this is inappropriate and must be discarded.
Right, so all those quotes that you were making were phrases that were in the report, and they were summarizing all those ideas.
Oh, yeah.
So the very thing that LaRouche is for must be eliminated, the individualist, rationalist, materialist that emerged from the Italian Renaissance.
Yeah, right, because we were moving from the age of enlightenment or reason into the age of the sort of postmodern
Gaia.
Yeah. You know. Now, I thought it was interesting in the first paragraph here where he talks about the perilous nation is imminently confronted with, in fact, the peril of the whole human species, is nothing less than complete elimination of what mankind has historically regarded as its, italicized the word soul. So, elimination of what mankind has historically regarded as its soul. So, I remember a couple weeks ago, I sort of started to take the point of view that when Marshall said that he empathized with his students because they had no body or no identity, that he was saying, in a sense, that, you know, that they had lost their soul, or that the electronic media had replaced their soul.
Their literate soul, yeah.
Yeah. And that seems to be similar to what LaRouche is saying here. For different reason, LaRouche is looking at the content. LaRouche's and McClellan's looking at the context, but they're both arriving at the same conclusion here, I think.
Yeah, LaRouche is looking at the intellectual ideational level of our minds.
Mm-hmm.
The ideas are determining what the soul is or whether it exists.
Yeah.
Whereas McLuhan sees the ideas as only half the story. The other part is the collective effect of the phonetic alphabet. And print creates the soul.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, Thompson would say, oh, no, there's a soul that survives death and do your yoga and develop your astral projection abilities, right?
Right. But it was Thompson, I remember, who related the story of the kid who was a loner and spent all his time by himself, and one day he was at a public swimming pool where he was drowning and he went unconscious, and when they were reviving him and he was coming back to consciousness, he was unconsciously muttering verbatim television commercials that he had watched, you know, sitting alone by himself. So, that relates to what LaRouche is saying here. Our brainwashers are proposing the complete extirpation of mankind's inner sense of identity and the placement in the vacant space of an artificial synthetic pseudo-soul. So I see that all three of them address this issue.
Yeah. And Coker does, too.
Yeah.
So the... is this on some tape that Thompson was
I think it's called Evolution of Consciousness.
I don't remember hearing that, but maybe I did, because I've heard that series, but maybe you heard a part I didn't hear. So, or I just forgot about it. Anyways, he sees the kid communicating TV content as the kid's soul.
Yeah.
So you have the alphabetic soul, the cultural soul, depending on what the technology is, and then the soul of ideas, of inspiration, which is LaRouche's version.
Yeah.
Thompson would be called the cultural soul.
Right.
In his Evolution of Consciousness, Thompson talks about the images of death and the afterlife in the various phases that he runs through over the last, 20,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he talks about the images of the afterlife and maybe what they're like as culturally determinant.
Yeah. And he talks about the evolution of the images. He confirmed my suspicion that the astral planes have actually been evolving over the course of the evolution of man's social and cultural history, because back in when the Tibetans were first talking about the Bardos, they referred to them as like this empty space where like nothing was going on, and you just wanted to get back into a physical body real fast because there was nothing going on over there. But now you hear people talk about the astral planes, and oh my God, there are all these levels and dimensions and places to go and things to see, and everybody's really busy over there doing stuff, and
Well, the Tibetans, have they changed their images? See, what you just quoted, is that what Tibetans say?
I don't know. I don't know if they've evolved beyond the original ideas in the book, Tibetan Book of the Dead, or not. In the Tibetan Book of the Dead, when you die, the first thing you do is confront the clear light, but you totally lose your identity, you totally freak out, so you start projecting any kind of hallucinatory content in order to fill the space and feel like you still have a body and you can still breathe, and in the process of doing that, you project the benevolent gods and the not-so-benevolent gods, and the more malevolent gods, which chase you around until you end up taking a body as a refuge or a place to hide from your own mind.
That was a good summary. So, it is interesting the way Thompson goes through the history of these images and how, at the time of, say Homer or something, the image of the Asplane was a dark, dank, cave-like zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets more glorious as you move through the last 3,000 years. That's interesting what Thompson does. I mean, McLuhan, as a Catholic, doesn't go into that,
Uh-huh.
That's the difference between Thompson and LaRouche, Thompson and McLuhan.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, LaRouche wouldn't touch it.
I wonder what LaRouche's conception of heaven is. I mean, if he's Christian, he must think there's this kingdom of somewhere, God's kingdom, and that's where you go. But I'm sure he doesn't have the mythic idea of a guy sitting in a chair with a beard.
Well, reading LaRouche, it seems that your contribution in this life is your immortality. He's almost like a materialist, or he doesn't believe you survive death.
Oh,
because he keeps it in secular terms. He says you get your immortality to the degree that you've helped the Platonic agenda,
yeah,
and contributed to the evolution of technology on this world.
Yeah,
that's your soul almost.
Well, yeah, but in terms of the individual ego, that's sort of fatalistic. In terms of if you've actually are aware on a level that's greater than egocentric or even ethnocentric, but on more of a cosmic level, then I suppose then that idea is satisfying.
What idea?
The idea that your contribution that you make here is
is satisfying.
Yeah.
No, I thought you were saying it isn't satisfying.
I meant it would be satisfying. Yeah, I mean, because you're not around to experience your immortality, so I don't know what, you know, you're immortal because your influence is carried on in the world, but I don't know.
Okay, wait.
I don't know if we really know what LaRouche believes about that.
No, we know that. You just said that those who believe in, who are aware and are cosmic, would not be satisfied. You didn't say it, but I think that's what...
No, what I meant was, using bad words here, but first of all, you'd have to be able to get beyond ego being egocentric, because ego wants to survive. You'd have to be able to get beyond ethnocentric, because you and your tribe want to survive. So you have to get left some level of transcending where you're so encompassed, you're like the bodhisattva, you're so encompassing the idea of alleviating the suffering of others or alleviating the suffering of the world, that your own survival as an individual doesn't mean anything to you.
Is this what the LaRouche implies?
This is what I'm saying. He must be implying.
Nah, you're exaggerating. You're putting it on another level. He just says you contribute to the growth of the society's technologies and culture.
Yeah.
Nothing about...
But you said that then that ensures your immortality. Well,
yeah.
Not for you.
No, not that is your immortality.
It is your... Well,
your
I
contribution
guess,
is your immortality.
Well, yes, you know, while you're alive, but when you're gone, there's no one to experience any immortality if you don't exist after you've died.
Yeah, well, LaRouche, I don't know if he believes one survives.
It's
after
metaphorical
death.
That you've become that you're, you know, you're to you.
Did you say it's categorical?
No, metaphorical. I mean, to say that you've become immortal because of your contributions you're making in the world. But then when you die and the world disappears and it's all gone as if it never existed for you, your immortality is carried on in the minds of others, but it's...
Yeah, that's what he means.
Yeah.
Now, all the other stuff, the yogi version of that, is exactly what he's criticizing here.
Yeah.
All these images of self-realization that he thinks is irrelevant to the ongoing project of technological expansion.
Yeah.
And almost creating a heaven on earth.
I wonder if he ever experienced cosmic consciousness the way that, say, Yogananda did, and he said,
No, he definitely didn't experience it that way. He doesn't agree with their images. Scott, what we're talking about here is very relevant to what you just read, because when I reread this through, you will see all the ideas of surviving death or spiritualism and those kind of things are the very things they criticize the Aquarian conspiracy for propagating, and they think they're counter to, LaRouche says it's counter to the actual work of living in this world.
Yeah.
So you can think of all these things that are in quotes here. They'd see that's a big distraction from becoming a quote genius in understanding the laws of geometry.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people on the planet now who, you know, are into the idea of the spiritual, you know, venerate this guy Ramana Maharshi as being, you know, this great being of magnificent proportions, blah, blah,
right.
blah. But, you know, I mean, reading, you know, I've been mentioning Ken Wilber a couple times over the last few weeks. Ken Wilber says, well, yeah, I mean, you know, in the level in which he was awake, he was more awake than anybody else. But he wasn't really integrating all of his parts because the guy had bad health. He could hardly walk. He wasn't doing anything to make, you know, in terms of creating new science or like that.
This is what Ken Wilber says.
Yeah. So he's saying, you know, yeah, he guess he was self-realized, but he wasn't fully integrated because all of his physical parts weren't working.
Yeah, and he was he's implying a LaRouchean agenda that he wasn't improving the technological culture around his cave.
Yeah.
Well, that's where LaRouche would agree with that.
Yeah.
He thinks that, that's Gnosticism. That's a big distraction.
Yeah. Although Ken Wilber can assume that view and still assume that, you know, there are parts of you that continue to exist after you cast off clay.
Right. So then he comes a little bit like Thompson there.
Yeah.
So he's kind of developing an early... I don't know if it's quadrophenia, but a Trinitarian schizophrenia.
Yeah, he does. He's very, very much into, yeah.
Into what?
The, well,
trinophrenia?
Yeah, he talks about the, you know, the big three, which is I, the subjective self, you, the other, and then we, the culture that, you know, puts us all together, and he thinks all three need to be developed integrally.
Right, and so he doesn't do the McLuhan cultural massage level.
Right.
That would be a subset of his third we.
Exactly.
So with all that we've just said, you'll see the words that are in quotes here that I'm going to quote from this Stanford Research Institute report on the what becomes the Aquarian conspiracy in popular terms. It resonates with all this guru stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the different Gaia and goddess spin-offs.
Right.
So,
this
is a good inventory of the Thompson Zone. Not that Thompson agrees exactly with it, but at least in my book, the meme that Thompson represents, the Buddhist meme, this is, and the feminist Buddhist complex.
Mm. Did Thompson ever critique the Aquarian conspiracy that you know of?
No, I don't think so. I don't know if he had any problem with it. He probably didn't mind it.
Yeah.
But he certainly knew all these people.
Mm-hmm.
So let me read this quote again. And this is from a pamphlet put out in June 1980, by the LaRouche Group. At that time, they were called Citizens for LaRouche, and it's called Stamp Out the Aquarian Conspiracy. So, stamp out the enlightened, or the cosmically aware, or the transcended masters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can see that fits into the technological liberalism agenda, as I say LaRouche is.
Mm-hmm.
Technological liberalism. It's the Western enterprise. Western technological enterprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what's interesting, when you read LaRouche, he goes into the technological liberal stream in India and in Asia, where all these Gnostic philosophies come out of. He says there is a strain of Platonism in there, hidden in the culture.
Yeah.
He has to search for it, but...
I think he says the Greek alphabet actually is a derivative of Sanskrit. Greek and Hebrew alphabets were derivatives of Sanskrit somewhere. He says that.
Yeah, he may say that. I can't remember that's exactly what he says, but he definitely makes a big deal out of Vedanta Sanskrit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's the quote. The para, or the section, which is on page 70 of my book, 1771, the peril this nation is imminently confronted with, in fact, the peril to the whole human species, is nothing less than complete elimination of what mankind has historically regarded as its soul, soul in italics. Our brainwashers are proposing the complete extirpation of mankind's inner sense of identity and the placement in the vacant space, you know, the absence of the soul, of an artificial synthetic pseudo-soul. Now, the New Agers would think that LaRouche is advocating a pseudo-soul. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So then LaRouche says, before you howl incredible at the idea that there's a new synthetic pseudo-soul coming in, you ought to review the technical study that was prepared in May 1974 by the Stanford Research Institute, whose contents were later used in popularized form in Marilyn Ferguson's book. I think it was around May 74 when Patty Hearst was kidnapped. It's the Simeonese Liberation Army probe. Happened, I think, in the spring of 74. So, and that's in that area, California. Okay, or at least around San Francisco. The study is entitled Changing Images of Man, Contract Number Blah Blah Blah, Policy Research Report Number Blah Blah Blah, prepared by Stanford Research Institute Center for the Study of Social Policy, Willis Harmon, the director. Dr. Harmon, now he would be part of what LaRouche calls MKUltra. Willis Harmon studied LSD and is one of the big bad boogeymen of the world that Ken Kesey came out of and the Grateful Dead. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a part of MKUltra, says LaRouche. Dr. Harmon later personally coached Marilyn Ferguson in writing her popularized version of the Aquarian Conspiracy. I remember around 1980-81, LaRouche writing in his newspaper his shock that the army or the military or some part of the Pentagon was bringing in Marilyn Ferguson to talk to the soldiers and the officers, and he thought that was pretty degraded. This report, the 319-page mimeographed SRI report, was prepared by a team of 14 researchers and supervised by a supervisory panel of 23 controllers, including anthropologist Margaret Mead, who LaRouche has always considered the queen of the Aquarian conspiracy, psychologist B.F. Skinner, Irvin Laszlo of the United Nations, and Sir Jeffrey Vickers of British Intelligence, and others. Now, here we go with the quotes. So I'll just say the word quote, and I'll go quote, unquote, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's just a word or two that's in quotes. The study begins with the argument that the fundamental self-conception of mankind, the image that mankind has of itself, determines the behavior of mankind. Well, that's interesting. That's the medium is the message. The cultural image determines the behavior, right?
Uh-huh.
So it's a psychological dilution of McLuhan's point.
Mm-hmm.
The study begins with the argument that the fundamental self-conception of mankind, the image that mankind has of itself, determines the behavior of mankind. So it's a programming idea, idea that culture programs what people are, that they're plastic entities,
mm-hmm.
plastic and mutatable. To change mankind's behavior from industrial progress to spiritualism, in quotes, one must first force a change in mankind's self-image, in quotes. The report asserts that in our present society, the, quote, image of industrial and technological man, unquote, is obsolete and must be, quote, discarded. The image of man appropriate to that new era must be sought, synthesized, and then wired into mankind's brains. The SRI report conducts a summary review of the, quote, dominant images of humankind throughout history from a quarter of a million B.C. to the present. So these images, that's like running through Finnegan's Wake, all the encyclopedic phases of human culture.
Mm-hmm.
It identifies 19 images of man, in quotes, that dominated in various epochs. From each one of those, it extracts such features as are useful in replacing the, quote, industrial technological image. Get rid of that old hardware, visual kinetic space. Now, the SRI then is responding to the software environment in McLuhan terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, McLuhan would say that the environment, technological, cultural environment is molding new images, evoking new images that are related to the sensory ratios, and could not be legislated or controlled by bureaucrats like the SRI report is proposing, right? So McLuhan would think this is pretty silly. Totemism and identification with animals in the Upper Paleolithic era is reported useful today. The farmer son of goddess Earth, unquote, of the Neolithic era is useful. The Sumerian image of submission to ruling elites must be retained in the post-industrial image. The Old Testament image of man having, quote, dominion over nature is dangerous and must be dropped. The Zoroastrian image needs to be, quote, worked on. The Indian image of yogi is good, will contribute to the, quote, self-realization ethic. The Chinese Confucius image will contribute to the ecological ethic of our future society. Now, LaRouche was pro-Confucius, and he would not see Confucius as ecological. He'd think the Taoism of Lang Tzu would be ecological. So LaRouche would say this is an erroneous interpretation of Confucius. Reading that again, the Chinese Confucius image will contribute to the, quote, ecological ethic of our future society. The Greek Dionysian / mystical image can contribute to de-emphasize material overconsumption. Now, there's where the Stanford report is thinking in terms of hardware consumption. What about media consumption? Software, radio, TV, movies, films, magazines, and internet consumption. But this was written in 74. The Greek Apollonian image can help combat the technological ethic in quotes. The Christian image of the New Testament must be reworked. The Christian image of the Gnostic Gospels can contribute a new, quote, self-realization ethic. But the image that emerged from the Italian Renaissance, the, quote, economic man, individualist, rationalist, materialist, seeking objective knowledge, this is inappropriate and must be discarded. So the Vatican wouldn't like this agenda. None of the fundamentalist Christians would like it. Of course, media, from McLuhan's point of view, media changed in the late 70s, early 80s, and created the rise of tribal Christian fundamentalism, totally marginalizing the Aquarian conspiracy gang.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to say anything more about that?
No, I think it's pretty straightforward. If we're, you've been following what we've been saying about LaRouche, this is obviously what he's against.
Yeah. I don't know how much time there is on the tape. I was just remembering. There's an interesting series of images collected by our friend Randy Kopang on the website Xenocrony.com. There's a link there within that website that says ad-education. So instead of education, it's adjucation. And in there, he's collected these magazine articles and images starting from 1900 and moving on through. And as you move through the 20s and 30s and 40s, you see that there was this trend to really hype up all the benefits of technology and automation to the point where, like in the 1940s and 50s, these advertisements showed like fully automated factories that were where human beings were completely extracted from the equation. Automation was, automated technology was running itself. And
these are from magazines.
Yeah, magazine images. And we talk about, plumbing the secrets of nature, and there's an article here called Machines Without Man, and the